Good morning. Welcome one and all on this beautiful autumn day. Welcome to you who may be here for the first time, and to those of you who chose First Parish as your spiritual home decades ago, and all of those in between. We are glad you're all here. I'm Fran Sharp, a member of the congregation, and on Monday through Friday, I'm the congregational administrator. Please turn off your cell phones in the sanctuary as they interfere with the assisted listening devices. Our settled minister, the Reverend Marjorie Maddy, is out of the pulpit today. And you know what they say about when the cat's away? Today we are running an experiment. The Worship Associates group at First Parish is charged with filling the pulpit on Marjorie's Sundays off. And this usually involves hiring a minister or seminarian to preach. But there is another way for us, our congregation, to come together for worship and hear a sermon written by an ordained UU minister. And that is that there are sermons available for such purposes through the Unitarian Universalist Association. So as a congregant, I have volunteered to craft today's service around the sermon written by the Reverend Amy Zucker Morgenstern. Reverend Morgenstern preaches in the Palo Alto, California UU congregation. I have chosen readings to complement the theme of hospitality, which is our worship theme for this month. Deborah had planned music for the choir to sing on that theme, and also as she does each week so expertly. Deborah and I and the worship associates and the choir hope you find today's service inspiring. Let us worship together. Today's opening words were written by the Reverend William Schultz, who served as the president of the Unitarian Universalist Service Committee for 6 years. This is the mission of our faith, to teach the fragile art of hospitality, to revere both the critical mind and the generous heart, to prove that diversity need not mean divisiveness, and to witness to all that we must hold the whole world in our hands. As Michelle Barkauer lights the chalice, let us read together the words printed in your order of worship. We light this chalice, remembering and honoring our own tradition and celebrating the rich diversity of traditions among us. As we search for justice, meaning, and purpose, may we remember that justice, meaning, and purpose live first in deeply listening to one another. And now please stand in body or spirit as we sing hymn number 407 in the gray hymnal. We're going to sit at the welcome table.
Thank you. Good morning. I'm Fred Pryor, the Pastoral Care Associates Group here at First Parish. Almost every week, we take this time in our service to share the milestones of our lives with one another. We bring our concerns and our sorrows, as well as our joys and concerns, to this holy space. We speak of our lives and the lives that we hold dear. Through this sharing, we sustain each other and this congregation. If you do not want to share out loud, you're welcome to come forward and place a pebble in the bowl by Fran. At this time, I invite you and the children to share any milestones you may have. Please tell us your name before sharing the milestone. Are there any milestones to be shared this morning? Lots of hands this morning. Nobody? I will commend Michelle. Michelle drives Ed Lewis to kidney dialysis 3 days a week, which is absolutely wonderful for him. And I understand he talks a lot.
He does.
Which is unusual for Ed. He's a quiet man. Deb.
My family has the great joy of announcing I have a new grandnephew. My niece had her second child, welcomed him into the world last Sunday, and we're all excited because his middle name honors my dad. His middle name is Glenn, so it's Zachary Glenn. So lots of tears of joy over that one.
Thank you, Debbie. Anybody else? Going once, going twice, going. For all that has been shared, both spoken and unspoken, may we hold these things in our hearts and may we reach out to one another in love.
So at this time, I'd like to invite the youth and the guides of First Parish to follow me out to religious education.
Before today's musical interlude, I will share with you a reading from the book of Genesis in the Old Testament of the Bible. The Lord appeared to Abraham while he was sitting at the entrance to his tent in the heat of the day. Abraham looked up and saw three men standing nearby. When he saw them, he hurried from the entrance of his tent to meet them and bowed low to the ground. Abraham said, "If I have found favor in your eyes, my Lord, do not pass your servant by. Let a little water be brought, and then you may all wash your feet and rest under this tree. Let me get you something to eat so you can be refreshed, and then go on your way, now that you have come to your servant." "Very well," they answered, "do as you say." So Abraham hurried into the tent to Sarah. "Quick," he said, "get three sacks of the finest flour and knead it and bake some bread." Then he ran to the herd and selected a choice, tender calf and gave it to a servant who hurried to prepare it. He then brought some curds and milk and the calf that had been prepared and set these before them. While they ate, he stood near them under a tree.
Welcome, 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 Valley of the Holy Name.
And now, Reverend Morgan Stern's sermon, The Fragile Art of Hospitality. The story of Abraham's guests has a moral. A couple of verses later, the guests are revealed to be angels. In fact, the implication is pretty strong that one of them is actually God. And they tell Abraham and Sarah, who have never been able to have a child together, who are 190 years old respectively, that Sarah will give birth to a son. The moral is familiar from centuries of folk tales and fairy tales from many lands. Welcome the stranger without hope of reward, and you will be rewarded beyond your wildest dreams. I believe this is deeply true, even if your guest doesn't turn out to have supernatural powers. Welcome the stranger, and we will reap untold rewards. I believe that hospitality, in its broadest sense of receptivity and openness, is central to what we are as a congregation and who we are as human beings. It's an oddly old-fashioned word, rather genteel, almost archaic, but I believe it is very relevant to where we are right now as a congregation, as a nation, as a species. And as Reverend Schultz says in our opening words, it is a fragile art, worth teaching and hard to practice. My etymological dictionary tells me that the word hospitality means friendliness to guests, and that the root hospice means both guest and host. When we are genuinely welcoming hosts who practice hospitality, the two are one. There are no guests, there are no hosts, just people sharing a home. When you first seek hospitality, you are a stranger, merely a guest, a sojourner, one whose stay is expected to be temporary. But true hospitality welcomes the wanderer home. When we offer our hospitality, we are offering to make this his or her home, as well as our own. We are asking them to no longer be guests. The interesting thing about a community that practices hospitality, whether it's a family, a town, a country, or a congregation, is that it feels like a family, but it doesn't make outsiders feel like outsiders. There is so much warmth and shared history, even shared language, in these communities that newcomers feel like they've come to a family gathering. But it's one where the family is just delighted to have someone new join them. This is the kind of family where you can be the sole visitor to their Thanksgiving dinner who isn't a member of the family and yet feel right at home, because they ask you about yourself and listen to you and include you in the conversation. If everyone laughs at a reference that's incomprehensible to you, and this happens all the time in families, because every close family has its private jokes, then someone will tell you the story that makes it so funny so that you can laugh too. And then there are families where, when you come to visit, you feel a bit like a paying lodger. The jokes go over your head and no one explains. They talk scornfully about people with opinions that are quite a lot like yours, and you're not inclined to tell them that. They talk about family members you've never met, and they don't clue you in and say, for example, "That's my Uncle Gus we're talking about. He's very eccentric." You can see that they feel affection for each other, but they don't turn it outward. The family members just make you feel shut out instead of drawn in. Some of you are familiar with the Harry Potter books and movies. In these, we have the illustration of two families, the Dursleys and the Weasleys. The Dursleys, Harry's horrible aunt, cousin, and uncle, who become his foster family only because they are forced to. They are a close family, but there's no room for anyone outside, certainly not for anyone who isn't just like them. Even though Harry is related to them, he never feels for a moment that he belongs there. Then he meets the Weasleys, his best friend Ron's parents and six brothers and sisters, another close family, and they just open up the circle of the family and welcome him right inside. His first visit is a classic case of culture shock, because he's never been to a wizarding home before and doesn't know about things they take for granted, like mirrors that talk back to you, or how to get rid of the gnome infestation in the garden. But because they welcome him so warmly and matter-of-factly, he feels from the first moment that he belongs. As a congregation, we can practice that kind of hospitality too. We want to be a family with all the warmth and ease of people who have known each other for a long time and understand each other's quirks. I want people to feel that sense of family the moment they come in the door, like guests invited to a friend's big Thanksgiving family dinner. If you're new, I know it'll take a while for you to sort out all the aunts and uncles and a while longer to learn all the stories, and that you might hesitate to share all about yourself until you get to know everyone a little better. But I want the family to make sure that you do become that much a part of things, that the family feeling doesn't keep you out, like at the Dursleys, but welcomes you in, like the Weasleys. Reverend Morgenstern writes, "My mother says that one of the best compliments she ever received came from an occasional visitor to her home who said, 'Whenever I come into your house, I feel like taking my shoes off.' My mom smiles when she tells this story. She says that she told the guest, 'Oh, please do.' It's the utmost compliment to her as a host that when she says, 'Make yourself at home,' guests know she means it. She's created a home that says to the sojourner, 'You are at home here too. We want you to do what we do. Take your shoes off. Put your feet up. If you get a hankering for a late night snack, poke around in the fridge.' If she were a member of the church, my mom might put it like this: share your beliefs. Speak your mind. Even if you are visiting for the first time and you don't know all the expectations, much less the acronyms and little jokes and the who so-and-so is who was reported to be feeling better during milestones, we'd like you to make this your home. So we will tell you what we expect of each other, avoid acronyms, we'll explain the jokes, and we'll introduce you to so-and-so. Soon you won't feel like a guest anymore. And as a church that practices the fragile art of hospitality, that's our goal." There is a Jefferson Airplane song that bemoans the terrible loneliness that you can feel when your friends treat you like a guest. What's wrong with being treated like a guest? Nothing, unless it's your friends who treat you that way. With them, you want more. When you're really welcome somewhere, you aren't a guest anymore. You have been made to feel at home. Maybe now we begin to see why the art of hospitality is fragile. It's hard to sustain. It's an endangered species of behavior. Because opening your home to other, to that radical an extent, is hard. It's a little scary. It's all very well when the guests are just guests. If they keep leaving the milk out or putting the dishes away in the wrong place, well, it's all right. They'll be gone soon. And then you can quietly put everything back where it belongs and get back to normal. But if the guests move in with you, say because they actually marry a member of the household and become a part of the family, then they're going to change things around. They might think the logical way to organize a kitchen is with the cutting board next to the stove instead of the sink. They might even want to arrange the furniture or paint the walls a different color. A new member of the church might have a different favorite hymn, one you never could stand. He might have political opinions that clash with yours. She might be so thrilled to discover that UUs have a variety of spiritual paths that she chooses one very different from your own. And if this has become their home, they're going to have just as much right to say how things are done as you are. Yikes. This month, as the hurricanes Harvey, Irma, and Maria have flooded people out of their homes and the new refugees have flooded into other communities, we've seen just how difficult this transition can be. Communities that welcome the guests with extravagant generosity take on a very different tone when it appears that the guests may be actually staying for good. Their cities will be changed forever by this. Hospitality does change us. And if it's true hospitality and not the hospitality of a hotel where you stay a few days and pay your money and leave. What about us? Well, Reverend Morgenstern notes that the Palo Alto congregation hosts folks that could not afford homes and need help. Their congregation generously opened their doors to them as a place to sleep for 30 nights, and also takes turns making them dinner. But she asks, what if one of the residents reads our pamphlets, recognizes kindred spirits, and decides to come to church every Sunday from now on? Wouldn't that be wonderful? And wouldn't it change the church in ways we hadn't bargained for? Abraham and Sarah welcomed strangers into their home. They thought all they were doing was providing food and drink to three tired, hungry men. Their lives were never the same afterwards. When we welcome guests to be more than guests, we get more than what we bargained for. I know a little boy once who enjoyed his new baby sister for a week or two, then informed his parents, okay, you can send her back now. They were a bit taken back, but not nearly as shocked as he was when they gently told him that she wasn't a visitor. She was a member of the family, for keeps, for better or for worse. It may take 10 or 20 years, but he'll be glad that they didn't send her back. Like Abraham and Sarah's angel guests, she has gifts to bring him that he can't even imagine. Gifts of companionship, humor, challenge, and adventure. All the gifts of having a sibling. If we each reflect for a moment on our dearest friends, the people aside from our family who mean the most to us, we'll realize that every single one of them entered our lives as a complete stranger. What wonderful gifts these strangers have brought us. That's what we get when we practice hospitality as a congregation. Like the little boy with the new sister, we get an extended, expanded family. I like that we're a family. That sense of closeness and connection is what I look for in my spiritual community. But there's one thing about family, and it's both a blessing and a curse. They can't choose you, and you can't choose them. Family is family, and you're stuck with them, all of them. Not just your favorite cousin who bakes such wonderful bread and tells such funny stories, but her no-good brother, the one who drinks too much and spends family gatherings slumped in a corner criticizing everybody. The church-family analogy only goes so far, of course. No matter how much we talk about church as our extended family, for most of us, church members aren't really related. If you decide to leave and never see any of the other church members again, it's unlikely that your next-door neighbor will shake her head, call it tragic, and say, you really shouldn't cut yourself off that way, the way she probably would if you stopped speaking to your parents. Congregations are like all intentional communities, like the families we choose instead of the ones we're born into. They take commitment. If we left a community every time someone in it got on our nerves, or if we told others they had to leave whenever they got on our nerves, no community would last long. And they often don't. Happy communities are rare and delicate creatures, frail and in need of careful tending. And they seldom thrive because we are seldom taught the art of hospitality. Reverend Schultz is right. As a church, we are here to teach it. We are here to learn it. We are here to practice it so that maybe, if we can get it right at least most of the time here, then just maybe we'll know more about how to practice it out there. The world needs people who know how to welcome each other. Imagine a cadre of trained welcomers going out into our troubled communities, cities, red and blue states, nations arguing around the amphitheater of the United Nations. They would learn to extend hospitality to each other, to welcome the stranger who is foreign and different and a little frightening, and to discover sometimes that the stranger's dirty face is that of an angel. An angel is a being who brings a blessing. And when we open our homes and churches and hearts to others and make our home theirs, I believe that we will find ourselves unexpectedly blessed. And now let us rise in body or spirit and sing hymn number 95, There Is More Love Somewhere. And now this morning's offering will be given for the ongoing ministry of our congregation. Will the ushers please come forward?
Thank you.
each week as a way to stay connected with what's happening at First Parish and to be hospitable to those who are new. We share announcements at this time. If you have an announcement, either Ginny or Chad will bring you a microphone. Please speak into it so that those using the assisted listening devices can hear. Are there any announcements to be shared today?
Hello, I'm Gail Hardenberg. Last week I announced that my year-long spiritual practice is called Inspiring Fundraising. And I offered to help anybody in the congregation who wants help set up how to have any donations made via Amazon.com. It's not to any cost to you. And in the coffee hour, I gave out these cards to a lot of people. If you have further questions, you can talk to me today. And if you weren't here last week and you didn't get a card, I'd be happy to give you one today.
Good morning. Mark Trone, 2 weeks away from the 116th Harvest Fair. We got a lot of volunteers last week, so thanks everyone for signing up, but we still have some key openings, specifically on the day of the fair to man some of the tables, the raffle table, entrance table, and the bake table. So if you have some time on the 14th, please stop down at the table downstairs during the coffee hour, and let's see if we can get you signed up.
Great. Any other announcements? I have two, actually. One is to remind folks, and you can read more about it in your order of worship, there is a vigil tonight sponsored by Marjorie and the other members of the Sudbury Clergy Association. This will be right out there on the triangle, which is called the Sudbury Commons. This is a candlelight vigil at the beginning of Domestic Violence Awareness Month, and we will come together as a community to light some candles. I think there will be a reading or two. It will be a very brief service from about 6:20, 6:30, that's when it'll start, so that we can get the candles lit right around dark. It'll just go till 7 o'clock. So we hope everyone from Sudbury and from other communities can come participate. The other thing, this is where I change my hats, and I'm Fran the administrator, and I want to ask you when you're down at social hour to take a look at the sign-up board for especially for coffee, people to make coffee each week, and to bring flowers for the table in front of the pulpit. These are two ways to practice hospitality, and in the case of the coffee making, we will definitely, if this is your first or second time signing up to do it, we can pair you with someone who's an old hand at that, and they'll be glad to help you do that. So please have a look when you're downstairs and sign up for any days that you can. Thank you very much. Let us join in saying the words that are printed in your order of worship. We extinguish this flame, but not the light of truth, the warmth of community, or the fire of commitment. These we carry in our hearts until we are together again. Today's closing words were written by the Reverend Gary Kowalski, who served as our interim minister 6 years ago. Welcoming the stranger in our midst, practicing an ethic of hospitality, really is the primary ministry in which all of us are engaged. It's the boundary line where social justice meets spiritual discipline. For if we cannot find a way to reach out to engage the humanity of the visitors who want to be part of the congregation, how can we ever hope to build bridges of cooperation and understanding to people of other lands and cultures? Guided by our faith and goodwill, we can make of this an in-between place, neither here nor there, a crack between the worlds where power can seep in. May it be so. Amen.